I was raised in a cultural community where you were really not meant to fear death at all. It was like, here's what's going to happen when you die, as long as you do all the things we're telling you to do, and then you're going to live forever in this beautiful place where everything is perfect. And I was always like, that doesn't totally track for me as a kid. It just, something didn't feel good about the thought of being on like a golden street for infinity. So before I even had to confront my first experiences with death, I was terrified of it.
What's up, y'all? It's your boy, David. Welcome to the show. This is Dead Talks. If you haven't been here before, thank you so much for tuning in. If you have been here before, welcome back. Today's episode is with Hollywood actor David Dastmalchian. He's been in movies like The Dark Knight, Ant-Man franchise, Oppenheimer, and his latest film, Late Night with the Devil, that is in theaters now, so go check that out. We had a smorgasbord of conversations in this episode. I don't get to use the word smorgasbord a lot, so I just really wanted to throw that in there, so thank you for bearing with me. We talked about his grief and loss in his life and in recent years. We talked about his addiction throughout the years and his journey through mental health that he's had to overcome. And it was a really intimate conversation, really insightful, super fun guy. He was really brilliant in the way he articulated his words and experiences that I hope some of you may relate with. And I hope you enjoy this episode as usual. And once again, if you haven't yet, hit pause, write a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you're listening. I'd really appreciate that. And check out our Patreon account if you want to get these episodes early and watch them on YouTube ad-free. That is something you'll get with the Patreon subscription, as well as some bonus episodes like Q&As with some of these guests. So check it out. 7 days free if you want, or pay $5 and, I'll put it towards the show. How about that? Other than that, I'll stop talking. Let's get into it. All right, Dave, once again, thank you, man, for taking the time to speak to me. First off, last night, I watched a trailer for your new movie coming in, and I think I definitely had a weird dream last night. It had nothing to do with the movie, but that trailer was absolutely kind of terrifying. I just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah?
Yeah. The Late Night with the Devil? Yeah, no, I thought it was a pretty badass trailer, so I'm excited to see that one.
When are you going to get to see the full movie? We got to get you the movie so you can see the movie and tell all your viewers about it. I'm so excited for it, dude. It's like, the trailer is, to me, like, it harkens back this, like, vintage grindhousey, like 80s even, kind of that feel of like when you were a kid and you'd see a trailer for a movie, like, you know, one of the Halloween movies or something, and you'd be like, I love it because it doesn't show you. I mean, obviously you get the gist of it's a late night talk show, something's going to go bad, but it doesn't really kind of tell you too much. And I think that's the art in good trailer making, you know?
I agree. I mean, me personally, as a viewer, I don't like watching trailers often most of the time because I feel like it gives too much. And I like a simple trailer that, like you said, doesn't reveal too much, but kind of gives you the emotion of the movie. And it's not a slasher, but it did feel like it gave you that hard throwback horror movies when horror movies, I think, were at their peak. So to me, it gave all that. So I'm like, super excited to check that out when it drops.
Thanks, dude. Yeah, it's going to be in theaters March 22nd, and I'm trying to bop around to different cities to show up and say hi to people. And it's going to be then on Shudder in like April. So hopefully, anybody who watches your show is going to get a chance to go check it out. It's it definitely deals with death and grief, which is interesting. I think that one of the things that kind of sucked me into this project and wanting to do it, because it's not like a money job by any means. This was definitely a low budget passion project. The two brothers who wrote and directed the film are just deep lovers of cinema, and they just really captured my attention with this lookbook and the script that they created when they were developing the film. And it's a horror movie, obviously, and it's kind of a wild gonzo, you know, thing. But the serious undertones to it that I found really crucial to me wanting to take on the role, because it was a really hard role for me. It's not easy for me to imagine myself as a, you know, charming, witty, late night talk show host. That just doesn't feel like anything within my DNA. So as an actor, yes, I love the challenge of doing something that's outside of my comfort zone, but B, it scares the living hell out of me because if I fall on my face in front of that camera, either the movie never gets made and the people are disappointed that they hired me, or B, it comes out and people watch it and go, this guy is terrible. So it was really scary, but But the thing that sucked me in more than the, because I love horror, I love vintage, and, you know, kind of like we were talking about that 70s, 80s vibe of classic genre of filmmaking, which this movie has in spades. But it's at its core about a man who is in the midst of an intensely demanding and soul-crushing industry, the entertainment industry, which I am in, and I understand and feel that pressure of constantly needing to sell enough tickets, exceed enough popularity, make enough eyeballs view your little shiny object of the moment so that it could keep you not only relevant, but paying your mortgage. So there's that pressure that this guy's feeling in the midst of really crashing. Like, his career is kind of like, is not going well. And I've gone through many of those periods where my career is like, oh my God, no one wants to hire me. My number, whatever. No one's buying the things I'm writing, blah, blah, blah. And in the midst of that, his attachment figure, the woman who is his love of his life, his best friend, gets sick and dies. And he processes it not at all. He literally, within 2 weeks, right back to work. He's going to, you know, push through. He's going to be a man, because men don't feel these things. We don't deal with this shit. We just have another cocktail and get back to work and make a hit show. And brother, there is no better setting for the table of depression, despair, and, you know, disorganized and fragmented mental states than denial, especially when confronting something as tense and overwhelming as death and the loss of a loved one can be. And so that dramatic drive of the character underneath it all, I hope, is something that makes, when people watch the movie, they're like, oh, this is more than just a wild, zany, you know, cool looking movie. Like, I feel like it has a lot of substance. And to me, be it through experiences that I've had with grief and loss, or experiences that I've had with my own struggles with mental illness, I have tried so many different ways to escape the feelings that I'm having, push away the thoughts that I'm having, and bury them. And when you put them down in the cellar, it's kind of like Frankenstein's monster. They're still getting charged with all that electricity that your brain and your spirit and your body is sending it. And it's getting sometimes stronger and more powerful than you can handle. And it's going to come breaking through the cellar door, whether you're ready or not. So if you're out there watching this and you're trying to push that stuff down in the cellar, man, take it from one mad scientist over here. Get in therapy, start talking, start connecting with people, and, you know, finding a way to be heard, to listen, and also to get support.
I love that. I didn't know the depth of that character. And as you're alluding to how it seems to be a crossover in regards to your own experiences, obviously maybe not having a late night talk show with the devil, but in regards to mental health and grief of your own processes in your life. So what is that crossover? How have those emotions and those checkpoints in life, how has it affected you? Like, what are those checkpoints and experiences around grief and loss or mental health?
You know, David, I have experienced death at so many different times. Some of the stories they're all profound. I will say that for some reason, as a young child, it was something that just got stuck in my psyche. And it was something I became obsessed with at a young age, a fear of the unknown, of what happens when we go. It's something I used to lay in bed and have night sweats, and I started early age insomnia, very young. I grew up in Kansas, and I was raised in a cultural community where you were really not meant to fear death at all. It was like, here's what's going to happen when you die, as long as you do all the things we're telling you to do, and then you're going to live forever in this beautiful place where everything is perfect. And I was always like, that doesn't totally track for me as a kid. It just, something didn't feel good about the thought of being on like a golden street for infinity, if that makes any sense. I just, something was really hard for me, and it still was like letting go or saying goodbye, whatever, whenever I would get any kind of peace with that. So before I even had to confront my first experiences with death, I was terrified of it. Then both of my parents, interestingly, were estranged from one of their parents well, I would say my father wasn't, he was estranged in the sense that he was removed from her. His mother lived in Iran. My father's in Kansas, hadn't seen his mother in like 30 years. And I'll never forget being a very little boy when my dad got the call that his mom had passed. My mother was very estranged from her father. I remember being in the same spot in the kitchen when she got the call that her father had passed and watching the way my parents were taking in this information. Soon after that, I was in sixth grade, seventh grade, going into a deeper and deeper struggle with depression, anxiety, and insomnia. And my best friend at the time had a really bad condition with his asthma. And we used to talk on the phone until late at night, and probably 11 o'clock was late back in seventh grade, but we'd talk on the phone secretly and then go to sleep. And one night we got off the phone and he had an asthma attack and he passed away and died. And it was this trauma that stuck to me. And unfortunately, the way that I was kind of aided in all of that stuff, the anxiety, the depression, the fears that I had, I was already starting to wrestle with suicidal ideation by fifth grade. And I started planning these things out. And then the death of my friend, the resource that I was given for comfort with that. And I'm, by the way, anybody who misinterprets, I'm not here to shit on the importance and value of a spiritual practice or religion. I think it's very important and it can be so beneficial to somebody's journey. But that was the only comfort and support that I was given, which was like, don't be sad. He was religious. He's going to be okay. That's the Band-Aid. And here we're going to have a service and we're going to use this service as an opportunity to talk about that part of it. And then it's okay to feel sad for a minute, but you got to get over it because he's in, you know, paradise now or whatever. And I needed a grown-up to provide, I think looking back on it, a safer space to like have longer, deeper conversations with me about this without that context. I think that would have been really, really helpful for me. And it just didn't happen. And so I think I carried this stuff around for a very, very long time. This paradoxical juxtaposition between trying to continue to invest in the faith that I feel deep in my soul about the benevolence of something greater than us, a higher power that is a beautiful force in the universe that is going to reunite us all in some beautiful way, while at the same time looking at the reality of being a human and having to let go of life, pets going away. And then I unfortunately started medicating myself through drugs and alcohol. And I have such a terrible disease, David, with my addiction issues that I just spiraled very quickly within a few short years into pretty heavy opioid addiction. And that then led to the experience of near death for myself, as well as numerous times the deaths of people that I had grown to care about or loved. And I started my journey 22 years ago this May. I got sober. I started talking to professional therapists. I found spiritual guidance in all of these factors. And I began the journey that's led to today. And anybody who's watching who thinks that 22 years of recovery and therapy and psychology and spiritual journey and 12-step and all that is going to just solve everything, it's not. But man, it makes it so much better. I lost both of my parents in the last few years. And as difficult as those losses were for me, and as hard as that journey has been, and as nonlinear as the process of grieving both of my parents has been, I am stronger and able to be here today and talk to you and talk to my kids in a much more non-binary way about life and death and loss and gain and, you know, grief and joy. And there's this space in between that can be really profoundly beautiful. And I'm learning. I feel like every day is a new step for me. That's why I'm glad that we're having this conversation, because I'm going to learn something from you today, you know?
Well, damn, David, thank you for sharing that. There's just so much in there. And especially, I feel like, you know, before you got sober, everything you were saying just kind of felt like what you said in the beginning of the episode, and that maybe you even put things in the cellar where you didn't have those conversations with certain people, and maybe you didn't get it out of you per se. And maybe that's where it kind of like built up. But the fact that you even took those steps to realized it and been on this journey for the last 22 years and used the word nonlinear, and the space in between, there's just so much, like, there's so much gold in the words you just said. It's like the space in between are like the hard parts, but the space in between is also where like the beauty happens and you make these realizations and you actually do grow and try to get to a better place. And like you said, it's not easy. But in regards to you losing your parents amidst, you know, having gone through this process of being sober, did it, for lack of better terms, did it trigger feelings of going back to maybe where you were in the past, and how did you overcome those feelings?
Sure. So July 2020, put yourself back in that mind space for a second. It was hard for all of us. I had recently helped my mother and stepfather move from Chicago down to Texas so that they could be in the warmer weather. Mom was having some health issues, but they were, for the most part, just, I didn't think they were eating great and they weren't, you know, taking care of their teeth. So I'd help mom get like her teeth fixed, and I'm in LA. So we're all living in now isolation. I've got two kids and a wife here. We're trying to figure out how to live in the midst of a pandemic. My career has obviously just come to a complete stop, which was starting to really take off. We've got a country in complete chaos, and this disease that none of us knows anything about yet that's running rampant. And my mom and stepdad are still going to drive-thrus and doing stuff. I'm like, you're in your 80s. Chill out. Let me send you food. So mom one day gets this terrible cough, and it's a Wednesday, and I'm like, she got it. So we get a doctor to get her in to see her. This is like so early in the pandemic that like getting a COVID test was really hard. We got her tested. She's negative. It's Friday. It's like, go home, rest the weekend, come back Monday, and we'll get you sorted out. Maybe it's bronchitis. Maybe it's the flu. I don't know. Sunday, I have the worst day of my pandemic journey yet. My bank accounts got hacked. My car got stolen out of my driveway because my wife was sewing PPE for her dad, who runs a nursing home in New York, and they were out of PPE. So my wife's in the garage sewing masks around the clock and left the keys by the door. And somebody walking by saw that, took my new car and left. I'm losing my freaking mind, bro. And I get a call at 11 o'clock at night from my mom and stepdad. They shared a cell phone, which means it's 1 a.m. there. And I'm like, fudge, this is not good. They're at my stepdad says, I'm at the hospital. Your mom sat on the couch, couldn't get up. Turns out it wasn't COVID. It wasn't anything like that. Her heart was failing. So the coughing she was having was the fluid that was starting to fill her lungs. And we had to, in the matter of an hour, I had to come to this stunning realization that my mom is all of a sudden on life support. Her ribs are broken. They've been reviving her now for the fifth time. So we could keep reviving her. And the doctor's like, I'll revive her as many times as you want, but it's just, and my poor stepdad, it's COVID. He can't go in past a certain point in the hospital to be with the love of his life. And he needs me to give him permission to say, we got to let go. But I don't want to give that permission yet. I didn't get to say goodbye. Like, I just talked to her the other day. We're joking about fucking Taco Bell, you know? And she, by 3 a.m., the like sixth time they had revived her, I said, all right, man, I love you so much. Let's let go. And we did. And it sucked so bad. My dad at that point in my life, I had so much conflict with. If you break it down to a real simple, this is an oversimplification. My dad was kind of like the bad guy of my childhood. My mom was my saint. I know a lot of people can relate to that. Nobody's perfect and nobody's fully imperfect. My dad was not a bad guy. He just was the scary one who made a lot more overt mistakes and who I had conflict with my whole life. But by the end of his journey, we had actually resolved a lot of our shit. And he had dementia. So I had a year of saying goodbye to him, going, talking, letting him go. My mom, it was just like that, like it was for you. It's just, boom, you're just all of a sudden this thing happens and she's gone. And so I did a lot of that processing of the mourning journey, which you're very familiar with, I'm sure. And if, you know, anybody who's done the Kubler-Ross stuff all the way through great therapy, through wonderful, you know, group conversations. I went on this long journey, and And something I want to say today during this interview that I think is really important for anybody out there who's struggling, it wasn't until this year now, which is almost this July, it'll be 4 years since I lost my mom. I can't believe that. But I am wrestling and dealing with still a lot of my own kind of personality disorders, character defects, issues that I have to work on in my own personal inventory, ways that I can, you know, be difficult and et cetera, et cetera. And I've had to come to this really frustrating realization that I have some feelings towards my mom, who has always been like this sainted figure in my mind and who I love so much and I don't have anymore. I had a lot of guilt over working through some stuff in therapy where I had to rectify that she made some pretty blundering mistakes when I was a kid. And it's hard to have any feelings of negativity to somebody who you love so much, who's gone and have to. So I've been, as we speak right now, writing letters and being like, I'm not blaming you, Mom, but I am saying those times when you really weren't there for me, or when I was contemplating, you know, suicide and the only help I got was the, you know, priest telling me, you got to read your Bible if you're feeling like suicide. Yeah. I'm like, I have some issues and I love you and I'm angry and I got to let it go. That stuff can be really hard.
And is that helping you? Because I'm curious.
It is. I wrote these letters. I'm still working on them, but it's what it's doing is it's helping me connect with that 10-year-old in me and that 12-year-old who experienced a form of abandonment. I wasn't left on the side of the road, you know. I was always told that I was loved. I have a lot of wonderful, wonderful support I got from my mom. But there was a time when it was crucial and I was in a very dark space. My parents had gotten divorced and my mom just had to. She was in a place where she was just so focused on her own self-help that I kind of got left holding. You know, I was working two jobs by seventh and eighth grade and I was just taking care of myself and taking care of her. In a lot of ways, because she was having a bit of a nervous breakdown by the time I got into seventh and eighth grade. So I was also really like being there for her. And the way that connects to now, how much I can inundate and overly attach myself to, let's say, my wife or my kids in ways that can suck the air out of them or the life out of them. I'm not blaming, but it is important to recognize where those instincts and impulses and that fear comes from, because it feels biological. The anxiety and the fear that I get sometimes feels like literally it's life or death. Doing the work and rectifying and recognizing that there's this 10-year-old in me who kind of got left holding the bag a lot and had to find really unhealthy coping mechanisms to survive, and healing him and letting go and connecting with and understanding how that happened, which has included writing some letters to my mom, and they're loving letters. They're not like angry. They're just saying things that I need to get off my chest, has helped me now get more breath. If that makes any sense, it's been no revolutionary shift. I'm not like a different man, but I got a little more breath every day. I'm getting a little more of an ability when, say, my wife or my kids do something that could really set me off or make me feel like I'm being, for lack of a better term, abandoned. It's just giving me some more breath to like get present and be the grown-up steering the ship that I need to be, instead of sometimes the 10-year-old who was taken control of the ship.
Damn, dog, you are super aware. That is and I think there's like a synonymous with awareness and being honest with yourself. I feel like people are aware, but sometimes it comes to like having that honest conversation about where you are and how you see things. So I'm impressed with that. And I mean, talking to your younger self is interesting. I had like an interesting experience. I think I was in a float tank in like that spot in Westwood Float Lab. And I started having like a conversation with my future self and then my younger self, and it's something I'd never really done, but it, even though it wasn't real or whatever you want to call real, you know, real is relative, but having that conversation did feel really good with me. It had nothing to do with my dad or my grief. It was like totally, it was just kind of observing my childhood as much as I could, and observing that and having those quote unquote conversations do unravel a lot. Because from my understanding, most of the shit we're dealing with, not all, is coming from something we've experienced that we almost don't even remember. So to unpack that is it's just like a roadmap to understanding why you are the way you are. And then from there, then you work forward to unravel that. But you went through some of your processes in writing, and I think the letting go aspect always confuses me. Like, I understand what that means, but how do you personally let go of that? Like, what does that mean?
Yeah. It's an active gesture of, to me, writing a letter that says that I was really scared at this time and I really needed support and I really am sad that you couldn't be there for me, or that, you know, the only help that I got was from, you know, religious figures. I think I needed something else, and I love you. I know that you love me. Just writing that, just saying that was really helpful in letting go. Also, here's a huge one, man. And this is a big part for anybody grieving right now or who is so angry, because it's been 4 years and I could still get so freaking pissed off that mom got that taken that way. Or let's say something else. I'm grieving the loss of, I've been married to my wife for 15 years. In the last year, the entire paradigm, the entire dynamic of how our marriage worked, because I've been doing this work and having to let go of my need to make her such the source of my support and calm, having to rely on myself more, means mourning the way my marriage used to work. I used to be able to feel comfortable asking for way more support than I was giving others. Like, I have to mourn that. Here's what I can say. If you're in this feeling of grieving a human, a relationship, something that is just feels like it ripped your soul out when you lost it, like when I lost my mom, if your ambition, if you're the voice in your head, the chatter that's going on in your brain is saying, I want to feel serene. I want to feel serenity. I want to feel this. I want to feel this thing. And that's where your focus keeps going. I understand that. And it's so great to have goals. Finding the ability and the regulatory tools, and by regulation, this is really simple stuff, like learning how to breathe differently, learning how to calm your inner voice, learning how to comfort yourself, but being able to sit with those feelings and being able to feel those feelings and acknowledge that they are just feelings and they will eventually go, to me was like opening the basement door for Frankenstein's monster and peeking down there and being like, hey, buddy, hey, 10-year-old David, I know you're hurting, man. I'm going to sit here with you. We're going to sit in this pain and we're going to feel it together. And if you're too scared to do it by yourself, trust me, I get it. I get it too. Get a really great therapist that you could talk to so you could sit in that pain with somebody that you can trust. If you feel like you haven't been able to find the therapist that works for you, there's somebody in your life who loves you and who's willing to sit there with you. And then eventually with the tools that you learn and regulatory tools, you're able to sit in that stuff a lot of the time just by yourself. It's like a little hot tub. And as uncomfortable as it is, the more you practice that, the more you realize that the feeling goes. And then I go for a walk, and then I do some yoga, and then I read one of my books, or then I do some free writing. Dude, it's like trying to be a fucking ninja. Pardon my French. It's like you got to get all these different skills, right?
A French ninja.
But it's worth it, dude. It's so worth it. Speaking of being a ninja, I'm feeling that I'm having is envy. I feel envious of your biceps. Oh, you are ripped. And I have been doing push-ups and my resistance bands for so many years, dude. And this is what I got. This is some bullshit.
It's a little pixelated, but I can't tell if the pixelations are making it smaller or bigger. So
they're a good joke. I am it's so unfair. But guess what? The world is an unfair place.
Hey, man, you could just like you've been putting in the work for your mental and your body, you could do the same thing for your muscles if you want. But I appreciate it. I know you got to get out of here, but the one thing you did tap into that I love so much is really sitting in that. It sounds so basic and simple, but it really is. I had a moment today driving, something stupid, and I like to think I'm aware of it. When I felt something, I got in a weird place really quickly, and I was like, you know what? I just literally acknowledged the feeling, realized exactly what you said, I think. realized it was a feeling, kind of like watched it, felt it, and then just watched it go away. Watched it wither away like you're letting go a balloon and the air just slowly seeps out. It's like it is, the emotions are a passing thing. The emotions are not you, in my opinion. It's like, and I think as soon as you realize the emotions are not you inherently, it might feel like that, like you said, like it's biological and it's genetic, but it's could be shit from the past or you haven't worked out, whatever it may be. So I want to be respectful of your time. And I know you got a role, but
No. What you said, please, I hope anybody who's listening or watching you right now hears that. Your thoughts are not you. That sadness you're feeling right now, that is not you. And they are just feelings. And there are so many tools and skills that you can help navigate without escaping them. And one last tidbit, just so you know, I just learned this. It's a Sanskrit question that I think is really important. And I just gleaned this week. It's one of my new mantras. I got my first mantra is I can count on myself to support myself when I need myself the most. And then this new one is, are my thoughts useful? Because when I start to get carried away in a thought of like, well, why is she putting all this energy into this other thing? And now how come I didn't get to have the energy when I was struggling the other day? And why did she? And all of a sudden I stop myself. Like, wait, are my thoughts useful? And how do they behave? Are my thoughts useful and how do they behave? I just want to leave that with you guys. It's just something to think about. I'm not saying it's the answer, but to me, it is helping me pause, get that breath that I was talking about so I can step outside of my brain and be conscious and go,
That's real. I love that. It correlates. I love that. That's important. That's a perfect way for you to drop the mic, as they say. So, David, I really want to thank you for opening up. The fact that again, you're talking about it, it could start a chain reaction. Someone could relate to you. Someone could think a little differently, and then they start opening up, and yada yada yada. And I think that's how it all works. One conversation at a time. So, thank you for taking your time with me. And before you do get out of here, I know we talked about the movie. If there's anything you really want to quick plug, I have to figure out the exact date when this is going to drop, but plug yourself a little bit.
Yeah. Late Night with the Devil is in theaters March 22nd. My comic book series, Count Crowley, is now in comic book shops from Dark Horse Comics. I am a brand ambassador for a casket company called Titan Caskets. Anybody out there who is in the process of planning funerals, I think it's a great idea to plan ahead so that you're not stuck having to plan on the day, which I've had to do numerous times, and it's very stressful. There's a company out there who I'm proud to represent called Titan, and they are kind of totally revolutionizing the system and being able to get high quality caskets to people for like 1/8 to sometimes 1/10 the price of the going market. And the federal law says if you walk into any funeral home, they have to take whatever casket you want. So even though they may try to sell you a $7,000-$10,000 casket, you can get one from Titan and they ship it there. And the law says they have to use your, which you choose. So that relates to the subject. So most of my stuff being that I like to dabble in horror and genre tends to revolve around death. So I feel like you and I are going to have this conversation again and down the road, and I look forward to being back on the show, man. I appreciate the fact that you're using your voice and your platform to do something really meaningful here. It's awesome, man.
I appreciate that. But the episode wouldn't be anything with talking to people like you. So it's more on you and the guests. So thank you so much for that. I would love to chat with you again. You're honestly,
let's do it.
You're fun to talk to you regardless. Like, this is some real shit. I'm with it. I know we don't know each other, but I'm with it. So David, thank you again. And for anyone listening, I'm going to plug all his information, movie information, links, Titan Casket, everything that he's got going on in the show notes as usual. And until next time, thank you for tuning into another episode of Dead Talks.